The first bill, practically within hours of taking the oath, was a bill to fix our immigration system.
Yes, ma'am. It was called the U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021.
Exactly.
It was essentially a pathway to citizenship for the...
May I finish responding, please? But you have to let me finish,
You
please.
Had the White House and the House and the Senate,
I'm
and they
the
didn't bring up
of
that
bill. I'm in the middle of responding to the point you're raising,
okay.
And I'd like to finish.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you imagine if Fox News would ever interrupt Donald Trump that way? Can you imagine?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, right.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for you on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. All right, we got a lot to get to today. Including, yeah, I know. For change, it's a busy show. That would be Desi Doyen there. One of the things that is going to keep us busy, of course, is her latest Green News report.
Yep.
Also today is Kamala Harris's interview on Fox News and J.D. Vance's continually insanely dishonest responses to whether Donald Trump lost the 2020 election or not. Though he might have finally given an answer, even while lying about giving an answer. And we'll have some more depending on what we have time for. But we're starting again today quickly with still more court news on elections out of the state of Georgia, as these rulings are now coming down fast and furious as early voting is underway in the critical battleground state, and apparently continuing to smash turnout records there. Now, we've already reported this week that Fulton County Superior Court Judge Robert McBurney issued two important rulings in the last few days. One is perhaps the most important, and that was that certification of election results by county boards of elections, even those where MAGA folks have sort of burrowed themselves onto the boards, those boards still must certify results, whatever they may be, despite whatever questions, real or pretend, that they may have about the results. They must be certified by 5 p.m. on Monday following the Tuesday election, as per state law. There was no wiggle room in the judge's ruling there, no wiggle room in the state law, as he explained, noting that any questions about those certified results may, of course, be challenged and adjudicated in an open procedure in a court of law thereafter, after the certification, as opposed to being done so with just a few people in a back room in a county somewhere in a decision that could disenfranchise untold numbers of completely legitimate votes. Which is why it makes sense, which is why we wait until after the certification to file any challenges, et cetera, in an open court procedure that everybody can see. No, you can't just have a couple of election officials say, I'm not certifying. I'm going to disenfranchise tens of thousands of people in my county just 'cause. Now, Judge McBurney also put a temporary injunction on a new rule by the MAGA Majority State Elections Board that had mandated the number of ballots cast at each polling place to be tallied by poll workers by hand at the end of the night before ballots are shipped back to the county headquarters. Though he, like me, pointed out how that rule might actually be a good idea. I think it is. In truth, it's done in many states currently and has been for years. But he said that the matter could still be argued in a full trial after the 2024 election, that it is simply, quote, too much too late to add right now to the to the rules and to the burdens of poll workers this late in the game without any details on how the procedure is even supposed to work, having been laid out for the poll workers. The state election board did not do that. And, of course, voting is already underway. And, of course, I believe he is right about that as well, even if I think it's kind of insane that Georgia does not already have such a good, you know, ballot hygiene rule, polling place reconciliation procedures in place, as many states do around the country and have for years.
Add it to the list of Georgia's poor hygiene.
Correct. And then, okay, so you already knew about all of that. And then late on Wednesday, after we got off the air, a different Georgia judge declared that seven new election rules that were recently adopted by the MAGA majority on the state election board are all, quote, illegal, unconstitutional, and void. Well, that answers that, I guess. Fulton County Superior Court Judge Thomas Cox issued the order on Wednesday after holding a hearing on challenges to the rules. The rules that Cox invalidated include three that had gotten a lot of attention. One that requires that the number of ballots be hand counted after the close of polls, and two that had to do with the certification of election results. Cox found that the rules are, quote, unsupported by Georgia's election code and are, in fact, contrary to the election code, which, it must be noted, is created by the state legislature and signed by the governor. Remember, one of the things that Republicans complained about in 2020 is that, oh, the rules were changed by, the Secretary of State or elections boards in order to try to help people vote without dying during the pandemic. And here are these Republicans supporting the state elections board changing the rules right before the election, as opposed to the state legislature, which is what the Republicans were arguing back in 2020, that only state legislatures could change election rules.
Well, they argue whatever is going to be most beneficial to them at that moment.
At any given time. But we haven't gotten to J.D. Vance yet, so just wait for that. Anyway, the judge also wrote that the Georgia State Election Board did not have the authority to even pass these rules under state law. He ordered the board to immediately remove the rules and to inform all state and local election officials that the rules are void and not to be followed. Democratic Party organizations, local election officials, and a group headed by a former Republican state lawmaker have filed at least half a dozen lawsuits over these rules. Democrats, voting rights groups, and some legal experts have raised concerns that some of these rules could be used by Trump allies to delay or avoid certification or to cast doubt on the results if he loses next month's presidential election to Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris, as he did in 2020 to Joe Biden. Judge Cox's ruling came in a lawsuit that was filed by a group named Eternal Vigilance Action. It was founded and led by former state rep Scott Turner, who is a Republican. The organization had argued that the state elections board overstepped its authority in adopting these rules. One new rule that the judge blocked requires that separate poll workers count the number of Election Day ballots by hand to make sure the number of ballots match the electronic tallies on scanners and check-in computers and voting machines and so forth. That's the one that Judge McBurney had temporarily enjoined with his ruling just a day earlier. Now, this ruling would make the matter permanent, and unless, of course, it's overturned on appeal by a higher state court. Though time is running very short for such an appeal, with early and absentee voting already underway in the Peach State and Election Day now about 2.5 weeks away. Judge Cox wrote that the rule, quote, is nowhere authorized by Georgia laws, which, quote, prescribe the duties of poll officers after the polls close. Hand counting is not among them. Two other new rules that Cox invalidated were passed by the State Election Board in August, and they have to do with certification. One provides a definition of certification that includes requiring county officials to conduct a, quote, reasonable inquiry before certifying results into any potential fraud or mistabulation, though the rule does not specify what either reasonable or inquiry actually would entail. The other rule includes language allowing county election officials, quote, to examine all election-related documentation created during the conduct of elections. Supporters argued those rules are necessary to ensure the accuracy of the vote totals before county election officials sign off on them. Critics said that they could be used to delay or even deny certification, thus disenfranchising untold thousands or even millions of Georgia voters in the bargain. The other rules that Cox said are illegal and unconstitutional on Wednesday are ones that require someone delivering an absentee ballot in person to provide a signature and photo ID, to demand video surveillance and recording of ballot drop boxes after polls close during early voting, to expand the mandatory designated areas where partisan poll watchers can stand at tabulation centers, and to require daily public updates of the numbers of votes cast during early voting. Not the results themselves, presumably, but the number of ballots cast each day. Now, there have been 2 full years since the last major Georgia election, and a full 4 years since the last presidential election there. So while some of these ideas I've just run through may be good ideas, adding them to the equation this late in the game is simply a recipe for disaster and chaos and confusion with voting already underway. But of course, that chaos and confusion may be the real motive behind the Trump-allied majority on the Georgia State Elections Board to introduce them this late in the game. And happily, so far, the court, two different judges now in Georgia have held and agreed that this is crazy to add these this late in the game. At least half a dozen lawsuits have been filed challenging some or all of the new rules. The Democratic National Committee and the Democratic Party of Georgia had filed 2 lawsuits and joined others. Election boards in some counties and individual election officials in other counties had also sued. Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, the state's top election official, has said that the last-minute nature of these rules creates confusion for voters and poll workers and can undermine confidence in election results. And he's right. No matter how much I hate agreeing with the reprehensible Raffensperger on just about anything. And an association of county election officials has also asked the state board to tap the brakes on these new rules. In a memo last month, the Office of State Attorney General Chris Carr, also a Republican, also warned that some rules appeared to be conflicting with existing law. So now that a Georgia judge has declared as much that they conflict with state law, hopefully easing the way to get into the election proper and focus on some real concerns for voters in the state this year. And yes, that would include the fact that anyone who votes at the polling place, as opposed to on a hand-marked absentee paper ballot, anyone at the polling place will still be forced to vote on Georgia's crappy, insecure, 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems. Well, yeah, we can focus on stuff like that actually matters. I have a feeling there will be many more such court challenges of varying types to the election and to voting systems and election procedures in Georgia and in many other states in the days ahead. And we will continue to try and let you know about the most relevant of them right here on the broadcast in the tumultuous days that lie ahead. All right, let me take a quick break here and come back with Kamala on Fox, where apparently she, at least, is unafraid to go. Has Trump showed up on MSNBC yet, Des?
He has not.
Oh, weird. And J.D. Vance finally makes an admission about who actually won the 2020 election and what that all means for 2024. That and Desi Doyen's Green News Report are all ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Ducks they quack, and fish go blub, and the seal goes ow, ow, ow. But there's one sound that no one knows. What does the fox say?
All right, there we go. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. As you may know, Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris has been on a sort of a media tear of late, doing lengthy sit-down interviews with all sorts of outlets, including podcasts and radio shows with all sorts of constituencies. She was on 60 Minutes last week and on Fox News, yes, Fox News on Wednesday night. That, as Donald Trump has been staying largely cloistered within his safe zone of right-wing outlets or pretend town halls, taking questions from Trump-supporting governors, etc., after he last week himself dropped out at the last minute from his scheduled 60 Minutes interview. And he's refused any more debates with Kamala Harris after he was so thoroughly humiliated during their first one, refusing even to show up, I believe, to debate on Fox News, for crying out loud. Because frankly, reality has caught up to him in these settings that he can't control. His fantasy world of a dystopian hellscape, you know, in America under the Biden-Harris administration simply does not resemble anything that is actually happening in this country. And so he simply cannot, at this point, withstand questions from real reporters on those things. Else it would disturb the fantasy world that he and Fox and the other right-wing outlets have created for themselves. At least in 2016, Trump was still able to do that. But now the gulf between reality and his pretend version of the world is so huge, is so far apart, he simply can't survive out of that cloistered world for more than a couple of minutes without completely withering. But for Kamala Harris on Wednesday in that Fox interview with Fox's Bret Baier, the guy that Fox likes to pretend is their straight newsman, he's not. He tried to, for example, we know from evidence that he tried to get Fox to change their call in the 2020 election.
Tried to walk it back.
Yeah, showing that Joe Biden had won because as emails and texts from Bret Baier that were made available during a lawsuit against Fox for lying about the 2020 election had revealed, Bret Baier thought the channel's accurate reporting on results was actually hurting their viewership. Anyway, in that nearly 30-minute interview on Fox with Bret Baier and Kamala Harris on Wednesday night, she was pressed on border issues and other policy matters that have mostly been fetishized by Fox and Donald Trump, like the pressing issue of gender care for people in prison, which obviously actually affects a tiny, teeny, tiny handful of people.
Something like maybe 10 people total out of 330 million here?
Yeah. But it's, and by the way, it is required by law and federal court order. And as Harris noted, Donald Trump himself also allowed gender care for people in prison during his 4 years in office before Fox sort of helped him to decide to pretend that it's a major issue that is suddenly facing everyday Americans or something. But Baier didn't actually ask questions on many policies that really do affect Americans on the economy, on abortion rights, which did not even come up at all in the interview, even as Baier repeatedly interrupted the vice president as she tried to answer the questions that he was asking. Harris supporters on social media today, of course, are suggesting, oh, she killed it. Trump supporters are arguing that Baier wiped her out. I will link to the full interview when I post today's show so you can watch it and decide for yourself if you like. But as you know, our concerns on this program are less about any specific policy proposal, certainly not any, you know, dumb culture issue, culture war issues that Fox likes to invent. It's less about the policy, you know, issues or the debates about them than it is about keeping the country safe for such debates. Even if we don't actually see much of those legitimate debates anymore, with one party sort of fully retreating into the Trump-Fox fantasy world. And yet, elections are still real. Whether some may wish to fetishize and fantasize about the results, and our small-d democratic way of life remains very much under threat by the guy who has actually been nominated to run for president by the Republican Party. And that, yes, seems worthy of covering on this program. That is always of concern here. And that issue, whether Fox and Bret Baier wanted it or not, did come out anyway, front and center during the discussion on Wednesday night on Fox, as Harris accused Fox of whitewashing Trump's most incendiary and threatening rhetoric of late, as he has been increasing his threats against his perceived domestic political enemies, who he describes as, quote, the enemy within. Here's how some of that played out on Wednesday night.
If he's as bad as you say, that half of this country is now supporting this person who could be the 47th president of the United States, why is that happening?
This is an election for president of the United States. It's not supposed to be easy.
I know, but
it's not supposed to be. It is not supposed to be a cakewalk
for anyone. So are they misguided, the 50%? Are they stupid?
What is it? Oh, God, I would never say that about the American people. And in fact, if you listen to Donald Trump, if you watch any of his rallies, he's the one who tends to demean and belittle and diminish the American people. He's the one who talks about an enemy within, an enemy within, talking about the American people, suggesting he would turn the American military on the American people.
We asked that question to the former president today. Harris Faulkner had a town hall, and this is how he responded.
I heard about that. They were saying I was, like, threatening. I'm not threatening anybody. They're the ones doing the threatening. They do phony investigations. I've been investigated more than Alphonse Capone. He was the greatest gangster. No, it's true.
We've
had a question. Think of it. It's called weaponization of government. It's a terrible thing.
So,
Brett, I'm sorry, and with all due respect, that clip was not what he has been saying about the enemy within that he has repeated when he's speaking about the American people. That's not what you just showed.
Well, he was asked about that specific...
No, no, that's not what you just showed, in all fairness and respect to you.
I'm telling you that was the question that we asked him.
You didn't show that, and here's the bottom line. He has repeated it many times, and you and I both know that. And you and I both know that he has talked about turning the American military on the American people. He has talked about going after people who are engaged in peaceful protest. He has talked about locking people up because they disagree with him. This is a democracy. And in a democracy, the president of the United States, in the United States of America, should be willing to be able to handle criticism without saying he'd lock people up for doing it. And this is what is at stake, which is why you have someone like the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying what Mark Milley has said about Donald Trump being a threat to the United States of America.
He's quoted in the Bob Woodward book that way, yes.
Yes. Yes, he's quoted that way. Mark
Milley.
Let's
try to minimize it.
Donald Trump's own chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said that Donald Trump represents the greatest threat to this nation and that he is a total fascist. But that is not anything close to how Fox tried to whitewash that issue that we've been talking about on this program since Monday. So, you know, good for the vice president there of calling them out on that on air, on that attempted whitewash. So in case we've got any Fox News viewers who are tuning in to listen, and I know we do because I hear from you guys, in case any of you have not heard Trump making that point over and over again about the enemy within and about turning the American military against Americans. Well, Kamala Harris has been raising the point at recent rallies, going so far as to play video clips of Trump talking about that, talking about the enemy within. That Fox apparently just couldn't find. There's no clips of him saying that.
It's hard.
We just have a clip of him saying, no, I don't know where they got that idea. Even though, by the way, many of the times that he has said those things, it has been on Fox News. It has been on their own propaganda channel. We played one of those montages from one of Harris's rallies earlier this week, along with her commentary before and afterwards at the rally. But here's the short 30-second version that sort of summarizes it, that the Harris-Walz campaign has turned into a 30-second ad, which, by the way, I guess Fox didn't have the time to play that either, even though it's only 30 seconds. And even though they did have time to play during that interview, a Donald Trump ad. During the interview with Kamala Harris, here's the Harris-Walz ad.
Donald Trump, more dangerous, more erratic than ever before.
We're echoing fascists.
The worst people are the enemies from within.
The enemy from within are more dangerous than Russia.
We have some very bad people. It should be very easily handled by the military.
I do remember the day that he suggested that we shoot people on the streets.
A second term would be worse. There will be no one to stop his worst instincts. Unchecked power, no guardrails. If we elect Trump again, we're in terrible danger.
And in case there are still any doubters out there, here is the fuller remarks from Trump, actually during the interview on Fox News, raising the point about using the military against Americans.
I think the bigger problem is the enemy from within, not even the people that have come in and destroying our country, by the way, totally destroying our country. The towns, the villages, they're being inundated. But I don't think they're the problem in terms of Election Day. I think the bigger problem are the people from within. We have some very bad people. We have some sick people, radical left lunatics. And I think they're and it should be very easily handled by, if necessary, by National Guard, or if really necessary, by the military.
If really necessary, we can just call out the military to handle those Americans who we don't like. Use the military against American citizens. And so Fox, and yes, Bret Baier, are apparently so wildly dishonest that they claimed to show Trump responding to the issue by showing the part of his remarks that actually didn't reference the enemy within, where he says, I don't know where they got that idea. This is the crazy, dishonest world that about half of Americans now live in, as Fox remains the most watched cable so-called news channel and routinely poisons the brains of its own weird viewers each day. And it's why Donald Trump can't spend, you know, more than 3 minutes outside of that bubble with a real journalist before completely withering to reality. And it's why he won't debate Kamala Harris anymore. It's why he won't show up for a 60 Minutes interview. It's why he won't even show up for real questions on Fox News and has these dopes like Harris Faulkner read questions from women in this so-called women's town hall that were all supporters
hand-picked.
Of... Yeah, handpicked. They were all Republican supporters of Donald Trump.
Vetted questions.
Of course, it is not only Donald Trump. It also now includes anybody within his orbit who must go along with this fantasy world and try to not fall apart, which is not easy. You'll remember the vice presidential debate just a few weeks ago when Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance was asked about Trump's January 6 insurrection back in 2021. And he tried to claim that what insurrection? All I remember is a peaceful transfer of power, peaceful transition back in 2020. And Democratic VP candidate Tim Walz directly asked Vance in response to answer the question as to whether or not Trump actually lost the election in 2020. Seems like a simple answer, but...
It's really rich for Democratic leaders to say that Donald Trump is a unique threat to democracy when he peacefully gave over power on January the 20th.
This is one that we are miles apart on. This was a threat to our democracy in a way that we had not seen. And it manifested itself because of Donald Trump's inability to say. He is still saying he didn't lose the election. I would just ask that. Did he lose the 2020 election?
Tim, I'm focused on the future. Did Kamala Harris censor Americans from speaking their mind in the wake of the 2020 COVID situation?
That is a damning non-answer.
That is a damning non-answer, and I'll get to that supposed censorship by Kamala Harris in the 2020 election in a moment, but Vance has been spending weeks since then, since that debate, basically refusing to answer that simple question anytime someone asks him of whether Donald Trump lost in 2020. Because it is the big lie on which all of Trump's other big lies at this point depend. If that turns out that they admit that, he actually did lose, then everything else falls apart. Last week, the vice presidential nominee was asked the same question 5 times in a row during an interview with New York Times' Lulu Garcia Navarro, and he gave a non-answer each and every time, trying again desperately to avoid answering it by referencing censorship on social media, which I'll explain in a moment. But he was trying to change the subject again by offering a long ago, debunked claim that this so-called censorship that he keeps referencing, which is another Fox News fetishized issue, that somehow this censorship was the real interference that cost the Trump-Pence campaign millions of votes somehow in the 2020 election.
In the debate, you were asked to clarify if you believe Trump lost the 2020 election. Do you believe he lost the 2020 election?
I think that Donald Trump and I have both raised a number of issues with the 2020 election, but we're focused on the future. I think there's an obsession here with focusing on 2020. I'm much more worried about what happened after 2020, which is a wide open border, groceries that are unaffordable. And look,
Senator, yes or no?
Okay.
Did Donald Trump lose the 2020 election?
Let me ask you a question. Is it okay that big technology companies censored the Hunter Biden laptop story, which independent analysis have said cost Donald Trump millions of votes?
Senator Vance, I'm going to ask you again. Did Donald Trump lose the 2020 election?
Did big technology companies censor a story that independent studies have suggested would have cost Trump millions of votes?
Senator Vance, I'm going to ask you again, did Donald Trump lose the 2020 election?
And I've answered your question with another question. You answer my question and I'll answer yours.
I have asked this question repeatedly. It is something that is very important for the American people to know. There is no proof, legal or otherwise, that Donald Trump did not lose the 2020 election.
You're repeating a slogan rather than engaging with what I'm saying, which is that when our own technology firms engage in industrial scale censorship, by the way, backed up by the federal government in a way that independent studies suggest affect the votes, I'm worried about Americans who feel like there were problems in 2020. I'm not worried about this slogan that people throw. Well, every court case went this way. I'm talking about something very discreet. A problem of censorship in this country that I do think affected things in 2020, and more importantly, that led to Kamala Harris's governance, which has screwed this country up in a big way.
Senator, would you have certified the election in 2020? Yes or no?
I've said that I would have voted against certification because of the concern that I just raised. I think that when you have technology companies—
The answer is no.
So— by the way, good for New York Times Lulu Garcia Navarro there to try to press him on that, but he still would not answer the simple question as to whether Donald Trump lost in 2020. Instead, talking about our big tech firms engaging in industrial gauge
industrial
censorship.
Scale censorship, yeah. Is what he said. Industrial scale
censorship. So he, you know, he's been asked this time and time again. He will not answer it because he's a coward, actually, because he knows the truth. But he has not been willing to answer it until last night. After weeks of avoiding that, answering that question and offering these non-answers in response, J.D. Vance on Wednesday finally publicly admitted that he does not believe that Donald Trump lost the 2020 presidential election. So I guess that means he believes Donald Trump actually won the 2020 election. During a Williamsport, Pennsylvania rally, the Ohio senator was asked the question again directly, I think by a reporter, because Vance now likes to take questions from reporters at rallies where his, you know, supporters can hector and boo the questioner when they ask something they don't like. He started by claiming that he had answered the question that he hadn't actually answered. He said he's answered it millions of times. Anyway, here's how that went.
What message do you think it sends to independent voters when you do not directly answer the question, did Donald Trump lose in 2020?
Sir, look. First of all, on the election of 2020, I've answered this question directly a million times.
Nope.
No. I think there are serious problems in 2020. So did Donald Trump lose the election? Not by the words that I would use. Okay? So look, we could, but look, I really couldn't care less if you agree or disagree with me on this issue.
So I think he finally answered it there with a no. No, Donald Trump did not lose the 2020 election as vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance now sees it, or at least now tells us that he sees it. Apparently, Donald Trump won the 2020 election, and I guess Joe Biden stole it from him. Of course, Vance is not an idiot, so he knows that that is completely not true, but his boss demands that he says as much. And so, the way he justifies it for now, I mean, he's changed his story as Trump has over the years, but the way he justifies it right now is that while he might not have, Donald Trump might not have gotten more votes than Joe Biden, Trump still won the election anyway because, as he has said over and over again in that Times interview and with Tim Walz during the debate, some sort of censorship on social media, that's what cost Trump, the Trump-Pence campaign, quote, millions of votes back in 2020. Now, if you're unaware of those, the specifics of those censorship claims, they're very big in the Trump-Fox fetishized grievance world, where they have been, you know, pretending for some years that the Biden-Harris administration back in 2020 forced big tech outlets like Twitter during the election to censor certain things. that they used big government strong arming, for example, to force Twitter to hide the evidence that the COVID pandemic wasn't actually a deadly pandemic or something, and that of Joe Biden's corruption that was clearly laid out on Hunter Biden's laptop during the 2020 election, if only Americans had been able to hear about it. So a couple of problems with that. Well, one, back in 2020, Donald Trump, not Joe Biden, was in charge of the federal government. And I'm sorry that I had to point that out, but since they keep bringing this up as if Joe Biden was able to use the strong arm of the federal government to tell social media what they can and can't say, even while Joe Biden was not even in the federal government at the time, Donald Trump was running it, I think I need to keep pointing that out every now and again. So no, Biden didn't use the federal government to somehow censor critics on Twitter and Facebook, etc. If anyone did, and by the way, nobody did, it would have had to have been Donald Trump's own government because he controlled the government in 2020. What the intelligence community during the Trump administration did do is put out a warning to social media outlets to be on the lookout for propaganda from foreign outlets, such as the hacked emails from the DNC during the 2016 election that absolutely did affect the election, like likely millions of votes, in fact, as the Trump campaign used those illicitly gained emails over and over again on social media and during rallies to pretend that they were some sort of damning indictments of Hillary Clinton. Remember, Russia, if you're listening, back from January 27, 2016.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press. Let's see if that happens.
Yeah, well, it did happen. That very night, Russian intelligence services attempted to hack Hillary Clinton's office that very night after Trump's comments. But the emails exposed by it wasn't successful, but the emails from their successful hacks of the DNC servers months earlier resulted in these emails being leaked and Trump posting one hacked email after another on social media claiming at rallies, "We love WikiLeaks." Remember that? Even though the material that they were helping to distribute was unlawfully obtained by Russian intelligence operatives and they were sharing it all over the place. And yet, J.D. Vance is claiming that social media sites in 2020 were censored by big government, which Donald Trump controlled at the time, preventing another potential hack and dump operation regarding Hunter Biden's laptop from being fully distributed enough on social media. And he now claims that the that cost the Trump campaign millions of votes back in 2020. Now, in fact, aside from Trump himself being in charge of the federal government at the time, the laptop story was not actually ever censored. After the social media outlets had been warned about another possible hack and dump operation, they feared that the Hunter Biden laptop story was exactly that. So when Rupert Murdoch's New York Post first released the story on it and began to trend on social media, they didn't censor the story. They simply prevented it from showing up in their trending news lists. Links to the story, to my knowledge, were never removed or censored. It was always still available, but instead of finding it in the trending news list, one might have to go to the New York Post Twitter account to get the link to it. Fox News and Donald Trump, and especially Elon Musk, since he bought Twitter and ruined it, have all now been pretending all of this is, you know, reality for the past couple of years, that there was some great, you know, censorship scheme by the big, you know, Biden and Harris, big government.
When they weren't in power.
Right. With Elon just outraged about all the censorship at Twitter before he bought it, amounting to election interference in the 2020 election. Okay, so now let's move the clock back forward again to 2024 and Vance's pretend outrage today about censorship in the 2020 election by social media, who didn't promote a potential foreign hack and dump operation at the time, and an operation that was actually meant to interfere in the 2020 election. So now we're in 2024, and we've got another election and another hack and dump operation by foreign operatives underway right now. Of course, using social media to block that information from the American people, why, that would be censorship by big tech, right? Industrial-grade censorship. Elon Musk, now that he owns Twitter and he's renamed it X, he would never stand for that sort of thing, right? Now that financial disclosures this week show that Elon Musk has given more than $75 million to Donald Trump's super PAC in support of electing Donald Trump, well, he still would never do anything so nefarious, right? This from The Guardian this past weekend. Donald Trump's presidential campaign worked with X to prevent information about J.D. Vance from being posted on the social media platform, a move that resulted in the journalist who revealed the information being kicked off of the site. That sounds like industrial-grade censorship to me. The former president's team contacted X, which is owned by the billionaire Trump backer Musk, about a 271-page document that was compiled by the Trump campaign to vet his running mate, J.D. Vance. It was linked to by Ken Klippenstein in an article, a Substack article that he posted. Ken Klippenstein is an independent journalist. X responded by literally blocking links to the material, claiming that it contained sensitive personal information on J.D. Vance, and they banned Klippenstein from the platform. Well, that sounds like actual censorship, doesn't it? Now, remember, Twitter never blocked the links to the Hunter Biden laptop story. They just didn't promote them with their algorithm. That was the so-called censorship that Vance was complaining about still this week, claiming that it cost Trump's 2020 campaign the election by preventing millions of people somehow from voting for Donald Trump, such that, no, as Vance finally says out loud, Donald Trump didn't actually lose the election. He actually won it somehow because of censorship. And he says that even as his own 2024 campaign is actually telling Trump's biggest backer to, yes, censor the social media platform that he owns by blocking links to the story that linked to the document and banning the journalist who posted it. Unbelievable hypocrisy that if you wrote it in a movie, you would say, well, that's stupid. Nobody would do that.
True.
The materials published by Klippenstein on his Substack in September appear to be related, in fact, to a hack of the Trump campaign earlier this year, which the FBI has linked to Iran. Documents from that hack have been shared with several media outlets which have chosen to not publish them. Good for them. But that would be unlike 2016, when the hacked material in question that came from Russia was posted by every media outlet and every social media outlet and almost certainly helped lead to Hillary Clinton's loss that year to Donald Trump. But by the way, she did lose. The removal of the material from X, Twitter, has highlighted the increasingly strident support of Elon Musk, the world's richest person, for Trump's attempt to return to the White House after losing the 2020 election to Joe Biden, The Guardian reports. After buying Twitter in 2022, Musk said that he was an advocate of free speech and open sharing of information, even if it offended either political party. But I guess that doesn't include material that was hacked by Iran from the Trump campaign. So now both he and Trump are, they're all in when it comes to industrial grade censorship on social media, even as J.D. Vance is out there claiming that censorship of similar material that might have hurt the opposing campaign was, quote, censored by big tech. And why nobody is actually asking Trump or Vance about all of this? Well, because they're going to lie about it anyway. So really, what's the point? And that's how the Team Trump games the corporate media to their advantage. So will America fall for it again? If you believe the polls right now, they just might. But of course, that's why you are smart enough to tune in to the Bradcast. Green News Report is next on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. What are you trying to tell me? I'm running late?
Yes, we are running very late.
Okay, then let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
The risk of damage has gotten really high. This is the cost of climate change.
Destructive hurricanes could increase insurance premiums across the nation. Small Business Administration's disaster loan fund runs dry.
Also the cost of climate change.
Plus, the Supreme Court allows EPA to enforce new limits on power plant emissions.
What?
For now.
Oh. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Donald Trump has pushed us to the point where we can't even agree on the weather. What a stupid time to be alive.
Yes, it is. This is your Green News Report.
Has anyone thought about unplugging America and plugging it back in again?
Okay, Desi Doyen, when I saw the headline, I thought this couldn't be. The U.S. Supreme Court did something that wasn't awful?
Yes, the U.S. Supreme Court on Wednesday allowed the EPA to temporarily enforce stringent new limits on planet-warming emissions from coal-fired power plants while legal challenges play out.
Are they okay?
The court rejected an emergency appeal from Republican-controlled states and industry groups seeking to halt the new rules, which require coal and new natural gas plants to cut or capture their greenhouse gas emissions. Emissions 90% by 2032. By 2032, so not an emergency.
Uh-huh.
But the right-wing justices indicated support for striking down the rules, just not right now.
So there's still plenty of time for them to be terrible.
Yes. Phoenix, Arizona this week is finally getting relief from another record extended heat wave. Between September 23rd and October 14th, Phoenix set new daily record high temperatures for 21 consecutive days, unusual for this time of year. In 2024, Phoenix has had 70 days at or above 110 degrees, the most ever recorded in a single year.
They blew away that record.
President Biden announced this week that the Small Business Administration's disaster loan fund is now out of money due to the costly 1-2 punch of deadly hurricanes Helene and Milton. The SBA will halt issuing new low-interest disaster recovery loans to small businesses, homeowners, and renters until Congress approves new funding. But Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson says that won't happen until after the November 5th election.
Mm-hmm.
The SBA urges disaster victims to apply now anyway.
Because Republicans are so concerned about small businesses.
A new Washington Post analysis finds that federal flood maps in North Carolina underestimated the risk faced by homeowners in areas devastated by Hurricane Helene.
Apparently.
Meaning the vast majority did not have coverage under the National Flood Insurance Program. Experts have long warned that FEMA's flood maps are outdated based on past flood risks and don't take into account future risks from extreme storms, even as studies show extreme precipitation events are increasing due to human-caused climate change. Not helping the situation is North Carolina's Republican-controlled state legislature, which has repeatedly blocked efforts to update building codes that would have curbed development in risky areas hit hard by Helene's catastrophic floods. And Donald Trump, in his first term as president, rolled back Obama-era flood protection standards, putting critical infrastructure projects at higher risk.
So Democrats aren't actually controlling the weather, but Republicans are actually making the damage worse.
Consumer Affairs magazine reports that the impact on insurance markets from Hurricanes Helene and Milton could have a ripple effect, raising property insurance premiums across the nation as insurers spread their risk exposure to help pay for widespread damage in the Southeast. In an interview with This Is Not Cool blog, Texas A&M climate scientist Andrew Dessler warns of the broader implications of the growing insurance crisis when companies can't charge enough to cover actual risk.
And so then the insurance companies just leave. Once you lose insurance, the whole economy falls apart. You know, our economy runs on insurance. Can't get a mortgage without insurance. The fundamental problem is the risk of damage has gotten really high. This is the cost of climate change.
And finally, good news for breathers in Los Angeles.
Hey, I'm a breather in Los Angeles.
Oil giant Phillips 66 announced that it will close its Los Angeles area oil refinery in 2025. It accounts for about 8% of the state's refining capacity. The company cited long-term sustainability concerns for the move and said it will continue to supply fuel to the state from other sources. The company said the announcement was not in response to new laws signed by Governor Gavin Newsom aimed at preventing price gouging and gasoline price spikes when refiners shut down for maintenance.
Either way, see ya, Phillips 66. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack.
What we're saying is we got to hit the road ourselves.
Yes, we do.
Thank you very much to our producer, Desi Doyen, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other we've ever done since the beginning of time, you can download it for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, you'll find me at TheBradBlog. We'll see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
What you say?